it just taught me that there was this thing that I wasn't good at, but because I wanted it badly enough and I attacked it with the right, you know, framework, that I could do well. And then I think having the right attitude, like not quitting when it got tough, and persevering, and insane work ethic when other people were doing whatever they were doing all summer. I was at wrestling camp, and other people were playing another sport in the fall. I was at wrestling camp.
You could bring up your skill and you can get into places where you probably are going to get lucky, but you need to keep going to bat because there might be the next thing coming. That's your time to strike, right?
And also entrepreneurs, they take risks and they have the courage, and they already have a lot of these principles of like, I'm just going to go for it, and I'm going to succeed or die on my own.
This is the Aaron Cordovez Show.
Okay, excellent. Mr. Justin Cobb, so happy to have you on today. I feel like we recently met, but I feel like somehow maybe we know each other from another time. You're coming on here and probably you have maybe the highest net worth, highest value company person that I've had on the show in the entire history. I mean, I don't know how big Carbon 6 is, right? You guys do software. You've been gobbling up companies. You guys are basically the mammoth and the biggest person in the e-commerce Amazon space buying softwares, if I'm not mistaken. So damn, it's impressive what you've done in a really short amount of time. I don't want to just say like how did it all start, because I guess everywhere starts that way, but I do want to do that because I just want to know from you. There's like, hey, I'm gonna go start a band, right? That's like one route, and then somehow you end up way over here. Like how the hell did this all happen
for me? When I was 12 years old, I was playing baseball, and I was a high school wrestler and won a state championship. And then when I went to college.
Oh, hold on. State championship. Is that just they say it's a state championship, but it's really like your county? Or what does that mean?
It was a true state championship, but it's Connecticut. So it's like, did you grow up in Florida? Or you didn't grow up in Florida. You live in Florida now.
Yeah. I grew up in Florida. I mean, I was born in Venezuela, but I did grow up in Florida.
Okay. So like on the 1 through 50 wrestling states, Connecticut would be a whole lot closer to 50th than first.
Okay.
But the way it happened was I love baseball, and the field got bigger when I turned 13, and everyone else was growing and I wasn't growing. And so I needed to figure out another sport. And so I weighed 86 pounds as a freshman in high school, and they needed a 103 pounder. And I was the only person that was small enough and scrawny enough to wrestle that weight class. So I went out for the wrestling team. My freshman year, I won one match and lost 19 and got pinned 18 times in the first 30 seconds. I'd never been in a fight before. Whoa. I was not a physically tough kid. I was slow. I was weak. But I thought it was fair because it's weight classes, right? And so I stopped baseball, which was my first love, and stopped soccer, which is my second love, and just went all in on wrestling. And I had an amazing coach who's the best mentor that I just could ever ask for. God rest his soul. He passed away a couple years ago. But he was incredible to me, and we went all over the country, and every day he'd bring me to a different place that had wrestling in the off season, and we'd go to tournaments all over the country. And slowly I got a little bit better and a little bit better and a little bit better. My junior year, I won a state championship. Now, that's the equivalent of probably winning like a starting position in your high school in some high schools in Florida. I may be downplaying
okay.
a little bit.
I've never won a match of wrestling in my life, so hey.
It was. You know what it was, Aaron? It told me that I could go into something where I didn't have any natural ability at all. In fact, it was quite the opposite. And just through the principles of having the right attitude, like not quitting when it got tough, and persevering, and insane work ethic when other people were doing whatever they were doing all summer. I was at wrestling camp, and other people were playing another sport in the fall. I was at wrestling camp. When other people were doing stuff in the spring, I was at wrestling camp. That, and just being a great student, like I watched just tremendous amounts of video. I would pick the brain of everybody that was around me. My wrestling coach, I mean, we spent 3 years in cars together and planes together, and I was asking him questions every single second of every single plane ride and car ride, and it just taught me that there was this thing that I wasn't good at, but because I wanted it badly enough and I attacked it with the right, you know, framework, that I could do well. And then I think, you know, then after that, it was like this fun time in my life. And I played in a band and I drove cross country and back like 14 times in a couple of years. And I found some cheating way to do college where I'd only go for like the first week, the midterms and the finals, but I could still get good grades. And I knew I needed to transition into my professional life to set up for the family that I knew I'd want to have. But I knew I had to do it my way, on my terms, with control and freedom. And I've stumbled upon this direct sales business that allowed me to do that. And then this Carbon 6 chapter for me, you know, for a multitude of different reasons, is just the next thing in that in that journey that started with, you know, I guess it was like playing the saxophone when I was in first and fourth grade, and then it was all the things I just mentioned.
That's a lot of ground covered in just like a few minutes, but I have to say, this whole wrestling and sports and getting into that is quite amazing. I'm still stuck on or interested in, I would say, this mentor. So how does somebody pick you to say, hey, I'm going to just be with you for this amount of time and teach you? Because I assume your life would have been very different if this person had not been involved. Like,
yeah, I mean, I can't.
How does that go down?
Yeah, I can't even imagine. Really, because I was a high school kid that I'm adopted, and my parents who raised me are incredible. We just had very different personalities, and I was a really energetic and hyper and excited person. My parents were incredibly intelligent and just very measured, and you know, I don't think stoic's the word, but it's like not far from stoic. And we just didn't really get each other. You know, like I'd want to go play with my friends, and they'd be like, why don't you go read a book? And I'd be like, ah, like that's the fucking last thing in the world I can do today. Like, what do you mean? So I would get in trouble in school, not for doing anything wrong, but just for like talking and just being energetic. And my wrestling coach was the one who kept me on the right path when I could have gone on the wrong path, because at that time I just thought that adults were kind of jerks. Like, they didn't really get me. I didn't think they were fair. I didn't think that the way they evaluated me was fair. I was wrong, more than they were wrong. He taught me also, like, he didn't put any less time into me because I was the worst kid on the team. He put the same amount of time. He put the same amount of time into me. And you don't always have the luxury of doing that, like, especially in business when you want to make money. But he had completely different motives. He just wanted to, he had the sport that he loved that he thought could teach young men lessons. And he wanted to teach me those lessons. And if I happened to be a good wrestler and I happened to help him, you know, win another state championship, that was a bonus. But it just wasn't even what he's optimizing for. He was just optimizing for making an impact on a kid who was a little bit lost. And I mean, you know, if I hung up the phone and I didn't tell my parents I loved them, he'd give me a lecture and make me call him back. If I swore driving down, the highway, you had to do 10 push-ups if you swore. He pulled over on the side of the highway. Like, he did not care. You know, we won a state championship, but we didn't pick up all the plastic bottles in the gym. And we get in the bus, and the first thing he talks about is the plastic bottles that we left in the gym, and how, like, that's not good sportsmanship. That's the person that he was. He's been the person that I've measured myself as an adult by in terms of, like, my moral compass. Even when I knew I wanted to have a much better financial situation than teachers get to have or coaches get to have, I knew I needed to do it in a way where I could be a mentor. I knew I needed to do it in a way where I could make an impact. And I found that making an impact on entrepreneurs was the most exciting thing to do, because, you know, they were hungry for it. It's kind of like they were hungry for it, almost like it would be nice to be a graduate professor because people want to be there, right? And also entrepreneurs, they take risks and they have the courage, and they already have a lot of these principles of, like, I'm just going to go for it, and I'm going to succeed or die on my shield, you know, all the time. He passed away from cancer just before COVID, like the week before COVID. And, you know, I did a eulogy at his funeral. We set up a foundation for him that we raised money for. And, you know, his kids are, they're more kids to me, is the way I look at it. And after the movie Pay It Forward, the colloquial term became Pay It Forward. And that became like the most succinct way to encapsulate this concept. He used to say it to me in longer phrases or sentences, but that's what stuck with me.
That's amazing. I got goosebumps at least twice just listening to this. This is one person just says, I am going to absolutely change this kid's life. And that happened. How many others do you think he impacted in the way he impacted you?
We just got a letter from the Wrestling Hall of Fame, which is in Stillwater, Oklahoma, I believe. And a year from this, I think it's April of 25. He's getting inducted into the National Wrestling Hall of Fame. The amount of letters that were written, the amount of people that are behind him. And again, like, he has great records, and he's one of the most accomplished head wrestling coaches. He won a state championship as an individual, as a captain, and as a coach, all at the same school in my small town in Connecticut.
Wow. What's his name?
Dave D'Alessio. Okay. So it's Dave D'Alessio. And the foundation's called the Coach D Wrestling Foundation. It's in Madison, Connecticut. Mm-hmm. The name of the school is called Hand High School. Pretty incredible how selfless of some people can be.
Really incredible. So there's letters just pouring in of people who have had a similar experience.
Tons. Tons.
With Amazon ads continually increasing in price, what is going to be your competitive edge? At Samurai Seller, we've created a software that helps you take control of your Amazon ads, not just with ad tools, but tools for analytics into your business and your profitability to make sure that you're always increasing in sales and in profit. Try it for an entire month for free on me. SamuraiSeller.com/start and get a free month of the cutting edge Samurai Seller software for Amazon performance. If you're having success on Amazon, you probably have cash to invest, right? The next level after making it big on money is investing. You have to be able to invest to get really wealthy. I've created a fund where you can put your money into Amazon brands. And because e-commerce is growing, Amazon is growing, and you have operators who know what they're doing, your chance of success on your investment is pretty high. I've created this fund because I do not want people to get burned, and where I can put my own money alongside of your money to invest in the best brands that exist right now. Go to aaroncordovas.com/invest if you want to find out more and you're an accredited investor.
No one talks about just what a great wrestler he is, just what a great wrestling coach he was, just what a great person he was, and how much he helped all of us. You know, and we all came together. So when that happened, and it's like February of 2020, we all just came together, and there's a couple hundred of us at one point in a Facebook group, and we're raising, you know, we're doing a GoFundMe, and I think we raised like $60,000 or $70,000 to make sure the family didn't have to, that all the gifts that they gave us that allowed us to go out and work in jobs that pay better, frankly, than being a public school teacher, even in Connecticut, that like we were writing the world somehow. But it was just big fraternity. It was just story after story after story after story about how we're better, you know, men, and fathers and friends and sons and than we would be if we didn't never met Coach Celestia.
That's crazy. I feel like it's, you know, there's, why are we in this business, right? I mean, I have enough money for myself, right? At the end of the day, that kind of life is, I'm not saying I envy it, but it's a model that something that I would like to do and impact individuals' lives in such a strong way. And I go, okay, how can I do that from my current life now? And I go, wow, I don't know. Like just hearing about it, literally, I'm trying to, why am I in this business?
Yeah, but of course, I mean, you impact your employees' lives in a very significant way. You impact your customers' lives, you know, it's kind of, that's more of a commercial way. You know, it's a carbon six. Like I had that direct sales business went really, really well. And it got to a point where it was passive and largely passive. And I have incredible leaders that are some of my best friends that I've been lucky enough to mentor.
Okay. So let's back up a little bit. So, this is a software company, no?
No, before Carbon Six, it started as door-to-door sales, and then I built like a force of thousands and thousands of people. I moved to.
But selling what?
The initial, when I was in the field initially, it was selling coupons for Subway pizza, or Subway sandwich store, and Domino's pizza, and Blockbuster Video, door-to-door in
serious?
Boston.
Like physical?
Yeah, they were like VIP
cards. Like a book of coupons?
Think of like the entertainment book, but just for one, it was like an open. So it would say on the front like Subway, and then it would say $20, and then you get like 5 free sandwiches to make back your $20 with the purchase of a 20-ounce drink, and then 32 for one sandwiches. And we do that for Domino's Pizza and Blockbuster Video and local golf courses and local restaurants. In the winter in Boston, people are tough there, right? And the weather's not fantastic. It's not where you are or where I am in Puerto Rico.
Similar to being tough. The weather's tough, the people are tough.
Yeah, and the guy who is my mentor, one of my mentors in that business, happened to wrestle at the same Division III school that I wrestled for a year. Like it was this crazy serendipitous situation. And he was 27 and he was making $1 million a year. And I was planning on going to law school or playing in this band. And it was like, I can somehow run a door-to-door sales company and do that. And he had taught, and the way he'd done it is he taught a bunch of other people how to run these businesses, and they built this business together. And so we did that. Now today, maybe 5% of it is residential door-to-door. Most of it is either higher-end business-to-business. A lot of it's like we're in just about every Walmart and Best Buy in America, every Canadian Tire store in Canada.
So when you say we, you still own part of this company, or how does this work?
Yeah, I have a large organization of several hundred people who run their own companies that learn through my system, that today run their own company. So in Walmart and Best Buy, we're in the electronics section selling. Like near you would be when you go into your Walmart and there's people selling Charter Spectrum services for internet and TV, those are our people. When you go downtown, And there's charity fundraisers that are raising money for a charity, like $1 a day or $30 to help end hunger, or for the Nature Conservancy or the Humane Society. We've raised several $1 billion for charities over the last years through doing that. Those, like 80% of those reps are part of my team. And then in Europe, we were going country to country as they would deregulate either energy or telecommunications. And when it was the first time you could switch, and we would build sales teams behind them.
I think that happened recently in Italy, no? They just got deregulated.
Yeah. So that's funny, actually. So the company is called Enel, and I think it's like owned by Berlusconi. And then the company that he set up was called Enel Energia. So like he had to, they broke up his monopoly. So then he created a sub brand with the same logo and the same company, but just said Energia below it. So we'd have guys go out door to door and in shopping centers and be like, hey, we want to update your bill from Enel to Enel Energia. And it was like the way that Italy's a different place, man. Everything's a game. So then I come to Puerto Rico to like take it easy. And then instead I start Carbon 6.
Oh, okay. And that was after, so what, you just exited. So you kind of, you have it on passive, this company of.
Yeah. I'd say largely passive. I mean, a lot of my guys will listen to this. Like, I love you all. But yeah, I have enough leaders that do all the day-to-day. And let's say I'm like involved at a board level. And so I came down to Puerto Rico largely just because my wife wanted to get out of America for a little while during the riots and COVID and all that stuff. We lived down the street from the governor's mansion in Atlanta at the time, and Atlanta was like the center of the craziness, if you recall. They'd broke into the malls and they were coming into the neighborhoods. Like, it was just a really crazy time. And so my wife's like, hey, let's get out of here for a little while. It's lockdown anyway. Our youngest had just turned, I think, 4 months or 5 months at that time. And we came to Puerto Rico just for like an Airbnb for a week. And loved it. And after a day, we decided to stay here until our kids get done with school.
That's great. And so you have a, what, like 1% tax for the next like 5 years going still?
It's less than that. It's 0%. It's no capital gains, 0% in distributions, 4% corp tax.
Wow. And that, how long? That's for 9 years, 7 years, something like that? It's limited, no?
So it's at least till 2035. And then, we all hope that they'll renew it. We'll see if they do. But it's awesome. And, you know, the neighborhood, I'm actually here at my buddy's place right now. Michael, who runs a competitor to Upwork called GoLance. Okay. The neighborhood, like, I thought I was going to come down here and take it easy and like do some investing. Because like, that's the goal, right? You make some money and then you're going to like take it easy and kick back and like put money on the roulette wheel. And I just like couldn't do it. Every business I saw, I wanted to build a competitor to. I saw all the holes. Nothing was exciting. And then the neighborhood here is really screwed up, Aaron. Like, it's like every famous Puerto Rican person you could think of, like Ricky Martin's right over there. And then Carlos Beltran lives next, a couple doors down, and Bad Bunny and Ozuna, and like the Paul brothers live here. And like a bunch of us, you know, who moved down here for different reasons. But it'll make you pretty competitive if you're a competitive person. Like, I thought I was doing pretty well and I came down here. I'm like, I'm doing not as well as I thought. And then the only people that I seemed to meet the first 2 months I was down here that were younger than me, we're all e-commerce sellers.
Right.
And it just became apparent, like I'd ran this cool opportunity business where we were able to help people advance their, you know, move up socioeconomically in a way that's difficult to do for the average person. And e-commerce is exactly that. And it was like, oh, I get this. Like, this is awesome. And I met Brendan Morris. He founded Seller Tools, and he lives like, again, two minute golf cart ride that way. He was, you know, 10 years younger than me. And 4 years before that, so 7 years ago, he was working as a grocery store, like in the deli, like cutting salami and cheese. And then he just exited his brand for eight figures and bought a house overlooking the ocean, like on Rockefeller's old property, like condos that he originally built for his buddy.
And hold on.
Like,
so Brendan is younger than you?
A lot younger than me. Yeah. I think he's like 10. Okay. I mean, I'm 44. I think he was 32 when I met him. So 35, I think.
Okay.
Maybe 36. I mean, he was a lot younger, and he wasn't working that hard. Seemingly, like he wasn't working that hard. And it was like, you know, how big is your team? And I'm like, I have thousands of people all over the place. Like, I see you're always on the phone. I'm like, we're in like eight different time zones. And I'm like, what about your team? He's like, I got a partner and then two people that I met on Upwork. And I'm like, what else? Wow. And he's like, that's my team. And I'm like, okay. So this business that you bought, that you exited for eight figures, like, what did it do? And he's like, it was a sports business. And I'm like, okay, what does that mean? He's like, yeah, it was water bottles and yoga mats. I'm like, you built a business from working in a deli, and in 36 months, you exited that business for over $10 million, and it was water bottles and yoga mats.
Welcome to Amazon. Welcome to e-commerce.
It's a beautiful thing, man. I just didn't know. I didn't know it was a thing. You know, like I didn't know that half the boxes my wife orders to my house, or 60% were from, you know, entrepreneurs like yourself. I had no idea. Yeah, I just had no idea. It was a whole new world to me. Well,
people have no idea that you can make all this money door to door. I've been finding out that recently. It's still a humongous business. Solar is huge. Rat repellent people. Pest control. That's a humongous business. I met some people in this mastermind and they're like, yeah, we're doing, I don't know, $7 million a year door to door selling rat repellent stuff. I go, what? This is... So anyway, there's so much business opportunities everywhere you look.
So then I start befriending these sellers because they're some of the other people that are around my age that aren't like grinding all day. And they have 50 tabs open on their computer all day. And like seven of them call themselves all-in-one solutions. So I think that's weird. Then we start talking about like how they get to exit their business to these aggregators. And they explain to me that model. And initially I'm like, wow, like, okay. So they didn't keep you? Like, I don't know anything about this world, but like, it seems like the PhD that you get on Amazon is probably more important than, you know, had I gone to Yale and gotten
the Harvard MBA.
It seems like that might be the case. But I don't really know the space, right? And then the guy across the street from me starts an aggregator, which he sold, and he didn't know anything about Amazon, that much about Amazon. And he's like, well, you know, they're giving everybody money. And he had
Hold on. Whoa. Are you allowed to disclose who that is?
I shouldn't.
You shouldn't. Okay, fine. You tell me offline.
I will.
Because, hold on. Someone doesn't know Amazon. There's money being thrown. They grab it, take the aggregator, and sell it. Well, that's smart because, that's most people sold out. I mean, most people that happened, right? Because nobody kept onto it. The guys who kept onto it are all failing
totally.
Now.
It's unfair for me to opine on how much he knew or didn't know Amazon, probably, if I was going to. But yeah, it wasn't like he...
Didn't have a track record specifically.
He got... Yeah, I mean, they were giving every... It was... You were getting money with a good deck. And so, as I'm realizing I'm not going to do this investor thing, I got to find something to operate on. This industry seems awesome. The language they speak is a language I understand and love, and then I start looking at the software side, and it's incredibly fragmented. Like nothing. There's no Uber. There's no Lyft. There's no Pepsi. There's no Coke. There's a $6 billion. We size it up. We think people are spending $6 billion on software, services, and automation. And by our math, nobody has anywhere near 1% of that. And that's crazy. You have a couple bigger companies that have done pretty well that everyone knows and uses, but a little more geared towards the new seller. And we just saw that there's some opportunity where if someone can build a suite for the professional seller and the large brand, and almost equally importantly, network well enough, because the distribution is so complex into this space, because there's like, you know, 1,500 separate nuclei. And so that seemed like a fun mission, right? That there's all these different communities, it's worldwide. And if we were able to, you know, if someone was able to do that, they'd have a chance at having a pretty defensible, fairly defensible situation. And over time, everything consolidates. And as we saw the sales on Amazon consolidating, you know, up to the professional seller, to people who know what they're doing, and it being more difficult for the entry for the new seller, we just thought it would...
The similar cycle is going to happen with software.
It has to, right? And we had a chance to do it from scratch. And so, yeah, that's how we started. That's how we started Carbon 6. We went out to the market and said, look at all this, you know, $15 billion being thrown at Amazon aggregators. We think that this is an alternative model where there's some aspects that are better about it. The analogy that we used was the picks and shovels from the gold rush. You never knew who was going to strike gold, but the picks and shovels made money for everyone who's digging. Yep. Yeah, that's how we started. So I started Carbon 6, and I'm so glad that we did. It's been, you know, it's been awesome. And to take this full circle to something we were talking about with our children, I was also very mindful. You said something about like how do you pass it forward, and you do it with your kids. There's no more important way to do it, right? It was important to me that they saw me at the age where they
in the game.
Yeah, man. Like because not just see me like on top and everyone's looking up and you're the evangelist of this big business, but like seeing me where they know like. Daddy seems like he might have gotten his ass kicked today. Like he doesn't seem like it looks like what he's doing is hard, you know? And he's still flying all over.
Yeah, I think nobody wants to see their kids resting on their laurels, right? Like hey, you, mommy, daddy, they already made it and they were here stagnated, retired, whatever. That's not life, man. Retirement is not life. So
what are some things you do to make sure that they stay down to earth?
I do the push-up thing too, by the way.
Do you?
I owe you 20. Yeah, I mean, look, not for cussing, but like something's happening. I go, okay, guys, push-ups. And they end up liking it. So I'll say like, okay, Luna, you know, 10 push-ups or whatever. They're fighting. I actually say, I don't care who started it. You both get push-ups. And they both do push-ups. And then one has a way of doing push-ups. So then Violet goes like, hey, we're doing Violet push-ups. And then, you know, they play around or like, I'll get them to do laps or something like that. But I do think we have become soft. And out of everybody I know, I probably grew up the softest of all soft. I mean, I never had anything. I had a credit card that my mom just gave me. I didn't have to do chores, really. I mean, there was phases where I had to do chores and I didn't. But then after, when I became 18 and I knew nothing, then I went into some like volunteer work where I had to do a lot of work, and I got like, I went through the ringer and I transformed as a person. Like, and that's when I learned how to do things and how to, I don't know, work. So for me, it didn't happen at an early age. It happened later. And I'm trying to get my kids to know that you got to work. I don't know. Push-ups is one of them.
I like to say yes to my kids. I mean, that's what I want to do, but I got to try to find a way to say no more often. But it's, you work so hard so you can say yes. It's.
I know. And well, wasn't this Jackie Chan or something that says, don't work so hard to give your kids everything you never had, but work hard to give your kids opportunities that you never had, or something like that, or teach the things you never knew, something like that. It's so different to, what are you going to hand over? They're going to hand over stuff.
Yeah. Right. My wife is from Eritrea, which is a small country in East Africa.
Wow, I never heard of it.
It's right next to Ethiopia. It's like in the Horn of Africa. They were refugees, grew up in Sweden, and we met living in London. And, you know, we've had them go over there a few times. And you know, there's running water some days. There's bread rations. It's different. You know, there's electricity sometimes. When it rains, you got to make sure that you catch the water because it might be the only water you have that week. And so we're trying to do that stuff, but it's like such, you know, it's like such extremes.
Sporadic.
That's what I was thinking about when you were when you're interviewing your daughter, Luna. And it was funny, but it's you're teaching her the language. You're teaching her what it takes to be successful because she's seeing you in it. And that was one of the things I was worried about, is if I came out of it too early, they weren't old enough to understand the lessons that I needed to teach them. Right. So now when my daughter is struggling to learn a song, or she wants to get a part in a play, or she's trying to figure out math, or my son's learning how to fish right now and he's gone like 5 times and hasn't caught a fish yet. Hopefully by the time this airs, he'll have caught a fish. That I'm able to like use examples of today, what I've done today that I can relate with them, or this week, and come sit in this call with me, or like watch this thing I'm doing. And it seems like the probability is higher if they understand that like the milk didn't come from the refrigerator. Like, I'll give you the milk,
yep,
right?
Yep.
You don't need to milk the cow now, but one day you're going to need to milk the cow.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I'll tell you, I was raised really by my mom, and my mom's name is actually Zulai. So Zulai Kitchen is named after my mom. Yeah. And she is a spectacular human being. She is this phenomenal, phenomenal hard worker. And she is fun. One thing that I learned from my mom, life can and should be fun. She is a party animal. She loves, that's one thing I always had in my life was fun. I didn't have to work, but I could have fun. And I knew that the person making that all happen was my mom. She called the shots. She was the boss. She's an entrepreneur. She did everything. She had no child support from my dad. I mean, she's a spectacular, amazing, hardworking, fun human being. And so as you're saying, that is something that I got. Like, I didn't have to work, but I knew what she invested in needs to be worth it, right? I need to show her that I'm, you know, all that work she did, like, for me, which, of course, she did a lot of stuff for herself, and of course, but she did do a lot of sacrifice and a lot of stuff for me and my brother. And I knew I had to give back to her because that was what she was saying. I'm investing in you. Or not investing, she would say, I'm doing it for you. But then I have to go forward to honor all the stuff that she did. So that is something that I took with me.
It's amazing. So probably, I guess the point there is there's a lot more nuance involved in why rich people's kids end up going down the wrong path, then somehow it's just inherently bad to be raised by people that were successful.
Yeah, I know that. And that becomes a worry of people. And that's, of course, it's something that I think about as you, and I'm sure some of you think about as you ask me, like, how do you keep your kids grounded? And in fact, my mom did tell me, look, your job is to get the grades. Like, I knew I had that. I had that job. And if I failed at that, I got hell, and it was unacceptable, right? It was a level of standards I had to have in school. And again, I don't know that's the best thing to keep track of. Like, your life can be horrible with good grades, or your life could be great with terrible grades, like long term. So I don't think that's the best benchmark, but at least I had something I was responsible for.
This goes back to the first thing, which is like, what's the best thing you can do at this point in your life? It is for a kid who's only really doing school, it is not to try to screw up school. It's to try to do school great. For every Bill Gates who dropped out of school, or Zuckerberg or whatever, like, for every one of them, there are millions of people that should have stayed in school and would have had better outcomes had they stayed in school. And the, like, the answer is, like, to the question is, which is more important, street smarts or school smarts? I mean, you would like both. Now, can you get school mm-hmm. smarts from places other than school? You can now. You probably couldn't when we were growing up. Maybe you can now because the information's out there.
Yeah, now you could learn from, hey, I want to learn sales training. I'll go to Grant Cardone, you go to Alex Hormoz, you go to whoever. You could just go learn from people who are either billionaires or 100 millionaires and get their information from them directly. You definitely could not do that 40 years ago.
You couldn't, yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. It's almost like for our parents' generation, or maybe our grandparents' generation, the pensions were so great. Entrepreneurship was so difficult at that point. There was so little information out there that maybe the best move and the best move was working for somebody else. Now, for sure, the best move is working for yourself. It's not even close. Like, if you don't own it or own part of it, then you don't have much control over it.
What do you think about people who do like a route, like a CEO of Weight Watchers? I think her signing bonus was like $15 million and then salaries like $8
million. C-suite, especially like career C-suite corporate types, have agents the same way, like, you know, baseball players or musicians do. And really, like, the entire negotiation is trying to find a way where they get paid even if they do a bad job, which is like the same thing that happens with athletes and coaches. And I don't know enough about big companies. I've not worked in a big company. I've dealt with a lot of big companies. It's scary what happens, right? Like, it's scary what happens, because in these big, like, matrix organizations, there's so many different competing interests, and it's definitely not pure. And there's so much politics, and the incentives are so messed up that I can't even imagine to be at the top of that, how hard that is. So if you can do that and make that battleship go forward, you should probably be paid a lot of money. I mean, it that makes sense to me.
Oh, for sure. Hey, I'm not debating the salaries. You know, in terms of financial gain, there is a route in the sort of corporate ladder, or, you know, AJ Patel, he sold Zesty Paws or whatever. And I think he had mentioned that a lot of the things he hired at the very beginning, the company's like zero, and he's poaching from these massive companies, head of sales, head of marketing, whatever, starting with a very high salary plus an equity. For that person that gets that deal, like, that's probably the best bet as opposed to starting something from zero. I mean,
okay, yeah,
it's
yeah,
all,
yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, I mean, we say all the time, we have a couple dozen people, I think, now in Carbon 6 that haven't worked for anybody. I haven't had a job until Carbon 6 in a very long time. You know, mm-hmm. one of the things we tried to make sure was we kept all the founders. We weren't Amazon sellers, as I said earlier, and we wanted to make sure that all of our product decisions were guided by Amazon sellers, for obvious reasons, since we serve Amazon sellers. And so we tried to find structures and creative ways to keep everybody involved. And not just like in a nominal way, but really actively. You know, Lee and Robert from Cell Investigators, they're both 50-year-old men who haven't worked for anybody, I think ever, maybe ever, but not since they were teenagers. Our core principle is we all own Carbon 6, and we're really trying to create this environment where everyone feels like they are completely empowered to make decisions and just go for it, and aggressive mistakes will be tolerated and defensive mistakes are not good. And I was on a call with our all hands a couple weeks ago, and I said, look, the reality is, of any company, not just a startup, we're not all going to work together forever. This is all temporary. None of us are getting married. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And what we care about is that when you go to do your next thing, that you've learned skills and a mindset and hopefully some tools that help you be able to do a bigger thing than you thought you could do before you worked here. Or maybe you thought you knew you could do something big, but it helps you do that. And so I think that like that's the way I would think about that.
Yeah, but I mean, I think a lot of employees and business owners, the end goal is the cash grab anyway, whether you're CEO or whether you're founder or whether you're employee. Like, normally we're kind of taught, I don't know where we learn it, but like, go for money. And again, money's not the highest purpose. Like, what do you live for? Who are you serving? That's a higher thing. But I mean, entrepreneurship, a lot of it is the cash grab.
No, that's a good point. Yeah, that's a good point.
I saw some statistic somewhere and I was looking at the average earnings of an entrepreneur, right? Or self-employed, not self-employed, but anybody who started a business. And then the average salary. And what I thought was interesting when I saw the numbers, they were about the same. I don't know, it's like a, it was like 80 grand or 90 grand or something. Like the average business owner means like 80 grand, 90 grand. And the average employee makes like 80, 90. And if you're kind of going to be average, I'm telling you, it's much better to be an employee because you don't have the risk and the headache. And the, like the chance of failing, if you're not going to go all in entrepreneurship, I think is really horrible and you shouldn't do it. You really should take a job. And not because you have automatic security in a job, but if you're going to not, where you get, where it gets outsized gains is where you do something massive, right? If you did find the massive company, sold it for, you know, nine figures, you're not going to get that as an employee, no matter where you are. Even if you're a CEO of a place, you're not going to get like $100 million in cash. But if you're playing in that average area, I think the employee is going to be, is going to have a better life. I don't know, maybe.
I totally agree. You know, investing's the same thing. So I think the actual statistic is that, if you take people that just put their money in the S&P 500 over the last, whatever, 60 or 80 years, and then you take everyone, any sort of investor, only 7% of people beat the S&P 500. And wow. So if you're going to be a person that puts your money in anything else other than the S&P 500, you better be like Ray Dalio, intelligent, but it's the same thing. Like, it's way more stressful to watch your portfolio, to watch these bets that you're taking go all over the place. It's similar. Like, it definitely is less pressure being part of someone else's thing, I think, than it is when everyone's depending on you, I would think. Of course, yeah. The CEO of Weight Watchers is somewhere in there too. And I don't know who they are. Like, I'm sure they're an amazing person if they're listening. Yeah, good for you.
Okay, so let's talk about a little bit about Carbon 6. Now, you've seen, you know, the news, Thrasio probably is going to go bankrupt, or they're in talks or rumors or all this stuff. There's Benetago or whoever they are. They filed for bankruptcy. The whole aggregator model for brands is being tested. The guys who aren't serious are getting trashed. You're aggregating softwares. What is your take on, like, when you see that? Well, does that send any messages or anything like that?
I mean, there's cautionary. So, okay, yeah, let's start with the learnings. The learnings are that a PhD in Amazon is worth more than an MBA from fill in the blank. So I think that's the headline to the entire thing. But also, you know, I think just largely to the greater tech community, and like the reckoning that's happened over the last year, I would say that that's more cautionary tale to us on don't stuff seven layers of middle management. Like, have doers. Don't have, you know, idea people. Run lean. Over incentivize a small group rather than have a mess. I think we got lucky, Aaron. If we'd started Carbon 6 a year before, we might have a huge debt payment too that's getting ratcheted up by the increased interest rate. I mean, we've been incredibly efficient with our cash, partially because when we started too late to get nine figures thrown at us in 2 minutes. But we started early enough that we were able to get funding and financing to run the first play, which is get a push off the line from M&A through aggregating a bunch of great single point solutions with incredible founders that are plugged into different communities. We're figuring out how to build the self-driving car version of Amazon software, and we'll have a lot of amazing releases next year. But we weren't walking into a market where things were so unbelievably differentiated. It's just not what it is. The you could build the logic in several months. The people, the customers, the brand were important, and we found things that had a lead on their competitors. We went into reimbursements, and we vetted like a dozen companies, and we saw clear structural advantages that Seller Investigators had both in the short term and over the long term. where we knew we'd be able to get a position and hold it. We did the same thing with ChargeGuard, which is on the 1P recovery side. Same thing with SoStocked and inventory management. We compared ourselves to the brand aggregators when it was convenient for fundraising, but didn't see any similarities other than the words Amazon and like acquiring.
Right.
but what I would say is we're a software company that got that got a push off the line through aggregating a bunch of amazing people and solutions. But I think what the next 18 months looks like for Carbon6 is dramatically different on the product side and the integration side than what the previous 18 months has looked like. As we understand the customer and the different customer types that we have now, and we know exactly where we're going. And I think we tried to really just over-index on Amazon knowledge. We have dozens of people, if not maybe approaching 100 people, that are successful people in this community at different levels that are incentivized to Carbon6 in some way, shape, or form. You know, whether it was their group did an SPV and invested in one of our rounds, or we gave them some, they're paid advisors, or they're in a Slack channel. You know, we have a Slack channel with product advisory members of all incredibly successful sellers where our product people can go in, and it's like ChatGPT or whatever for Amazon knowledge. They can go in and ask a question. They can get an answer. You know, they don't get it right away. It might be an hour or 2 hours or a day. So I think where we did learn from is, again, when I met those sellers down here, it seemed crazy to me that the aggregators didn't all understand that their brains were the asset that they were buying, and that the SEO positioning on Amazon page was actually the liability. And like it seemed like if you had bought the founder and had him start a new brand, it would have gone better than buying his brand in many cases. Not in all cases. And there's some aggregators that I have tremendous amount of respect for. Many of them are our customers, but to the point of the sector of the market that you're talking about that got ahead of their skis and weren't able to operate the businesses, we were deathly afraid of that being our outcome. And I think that one of the advantages that we had was we wanted to build a huge business that we'd all have a very small part of that would be very big. And that's just a fundamentally different approach than maybe everyone else takes. And we thought that would also be an advantage because we would never be making decisions based on, you know, Carbon6 is not going to change my lifestyle, Aaron. My lifestyle is better than I could have ever dreamed of it being. I hope that we change a bunch of other people's lifestyles, you know, from people on my team to the founders that trusted in us to our customers.
That's amazing. Yeah, and I think that one thing that you said is that part of it was just luck. Not being in the place and time when people would have given you $100 million to, you know, and have that debt payment. And I think a lot of stuff is timing, and I don't know. You were around. I mean, you had money at that time. You just didn't jump into a space.
But yeah, I didn't know it existed. And then 4 months later, I mean, when we closed our Series A and got our debt facility in place, like days later, the whole thing just shut. Wow, I mean, wow. It was like end of quarter two last year. I mean, if we'd started the company 60 days or 80 days later, we would be a third of the way that we are today. Let's put it that way. The pressure on ratcheting up the R&D earlier on would have been so great that we would have had to spend disproportionately high there. We wouldn't have been able to build the sale. Like it just would have changed everything. You never know in life like what's a coincidence and what's not, but it's a whole heck of a lot more fun to think that they're not.
Exactly. Things do happen for a reason. And I do think that out of all, like, think of Jeff Bezos, right? I think of Jeff Bezos because obviously he's an anomaly, right? Second richest or richest person on the planet, depending on what day of the week it is. But did you see that interview of like 1993 or something like that, where he's talking about the internet growing at like 50,000%?
Yes. Yes.
That interview encapsulated the fact that he's saying, hey, there's never been he just recognized a pattern, which is the internet is so new and it's growing unlike anything in the history of time. I have to jump in there. But if he would have been born, I don't know, 20 years later, he would have never had the opportunity to even see that. Like, he would not have been the richest man in the world, like not even close, with the same skills, same opportunity. Like, people sometimes beat up on themselves like, oh my God, whatever. But there's a skill, and then there's timing, and there's luck. You could bring up your skill and you can get into places where you probably are going to get lucky, but you need to keep going to bat because there might be the next thing coming next year or the year after, 3 years from now, that's your time to strike, right? So I don't know. It's just there's a luck. People don't like to admit that, and they say, oh, I do it the same no matter what. Like
Zuckerberg doesn't meet the Winklevoss twins. Bill Gates doesn't live down the street from a university that happens to have computers, and he's able to jump out of his window every night or whatever he's doing. I mean, yeah, it would be somebody else.
That's it. It's that simple. So, guys, yes, I do truly believe every single person could become a millionaire. But millionaire is, you're not like at some super high percentage of the entire planet. Okay, to get to a millionaire with just skill and mediocre luck, you absolutely can get there. To get to, you know, $1 billion, there's a whole lot of luck that's going to get into there, right? You could be, anyway, whatever. So that was my speech for the day.
I love it, man. That's awesome.
I want to know about raising money, though. How do you get into those areas where people will invest and, like, do that? I feel like that's more relationship-based more than anything, right? Also, like, talking about luck, maybe you meet the person in some random location.
I think warm interest helps. So my financing founding partners, there's a guy, Sean Zubig, who started in one of my sales companies like in 2006. And then he went and he had a really successful career. There's a company called Newfound Gold that's up on the TSX. I think they're on the New York Stock Exchange and the NASDAQ now. But basically, they had a great business. And one of the things that they did in this business was they staked some land in Newfoundland because they believed, and a geologist believed, that there was gold there and nobody knew because it was adjacent to another gold mine. And they literally struck gold. So it's $250,000 or so in land that was staked, and it's now a $1 billion publicly traded company.
What? What do you mean land that was staked? How do you stake a land? Do you just say you
buy
it?
He's explained it to me. I don't know. I don't remember. But you have to be amazing at raising money because you're raising money based on, I swear there's something in that hole over there, and you never revenue. And so he was in that business, which is a tough business. I mean, it's harder than the door-to-door business that he started with me, I'd say. But he was fantastic at it. And they built an incredible business called Palisade Global that's now public. And one of their successes was Newfound Gold. He was looking for another project. I was looking for something else. And we were going to do the investing thing. So he introduced me to everybody he knew. So really, it was just he had a lot of contacts. He had a lot of contacts. And, you know, the initial money, once we had the idea, we wanted to go really quickly. And we thought that once somebody else figured it out, one of these bigger companies, that they would just block us everywhere. We thought like Assembly would just block us everywhere, right? And so we didn't want anybody to know what we were doing. Like the first year we went to Prosper, we were pretending we were an agency called Seller Compass, which, like, still when we signed the contract for Prosper, it's like under Seller Compass, I think. And like we pretended like we're just an agency that happened to stumble upon a couple of these businesses. So we wanted to rush. And so we decided we're going to start the company like on a Sunday. Thursday, we'd agreed to terms with four companies and we're ready to sign the LOIs. But we didn't have, you know, we didn't have the money. We didn't put the money together to buy them. We didn't have a company name. My wife came up with the name Carbon 6 that day over lunch before we opened up the LLC in Delaware. And then we had to go to investors and find a way to get money. And we were going to go the VC route, but we thought that was a risk because you could end up in diligence for longer than we had the LOIs. So we put in our money, like the first business I bought on my American Express. And then we started raising money and we did it from people we knew. I think we raised like $7 million in a couple of months from 80 different investors. It was like a lot of phone calls. I'd never raised a penny in my life. It's wild, you know, you're asking people that you know and you trust and friends and family and business partners and like, here's a deck and like throw in if you want to throw in. And I think it's like anything, Aaron, where like the things are just way more accessible to people that are just willing to give it a shot than you think they are. Like the same way growing up, like you think that adults know everything and there's just so many more levels to it than there actually are. I think that was what I was curious about. And we've been incredibly intelligent people and had incredible investors, and this is not to put them down. I'm just saying, like, when they see someone or a group of people and they know that it's a good idea and these people will die before they lose, then they make the same bet that you or I would make when we're interviewing an employee or we're deciding who's going to be a business partner. But they just have the benefit of having, you know, hopefully better analysts behind them than our individual brains. Or, you know, I've been advising a bunch of different companies that are starting to raise money. And again, like, it's really scary until it's not. And just like anything, a warm introduction is all it takes to get a conversation. And doing a good job in the first conversation is all it takes to get a second conversation. Which is, you know, that's the way the world goes around.
Nice. Beautifully. Very succinct and well put. Cool. So, and then what about For Carbon 6? What is, like, okay, let's say people who are listening to you here, what is the thing that you want to share with people the most? I mean, signing up for some certain software, or are you looking for people mostly to, you know, software brands or software companies to buy up, you know, or sell to you? Like, what is your pitch, I guess? I don't know. What should people do now they know you?
Yeah, we're probably not, you know, we're probably not acquiring too much anytime in the near future. I think it served its purpose that we wanted to serve, like I went over earlier. But I think we want as many people to engage with us, of course, as customers and trial users, and we have all sorts of different programs and betas, and you know, I'm very confident we have you know, an audit we can run for your whole business where we can go through and give you recommendations, and some of the results of the recommendations will be our solutions. Some are not our solutions yet, but you know, we're trying to build as big of a boat as possible, and we're very confident that the solutions that we have are as good or better than our competitors, and if we get loud about something, then it's because we know that people that are using the thing we're getting loud about would be a better outcome for them than using what they're currently using, and that's our job. And you know, for people that use any of Carbon 6 softwares, we now have single sign-on and single point of contact, and we've really been working on the user experience to get it so that you don't have to have 57 tabs open, 7 of which claim to be an all-in-one solution. And we're not done with that path, but every month it's getting more and more integrated, and the user experience is getting better and better. We look to partner with, you know, any seller that's over $500,000 or $1 million, agencies, accelerators, aggregators. You know, we've made great partnerships with private equity and VCs and people that have lots of brands. And we look at it like, if we build for that seller, you know, and that would be, you know, if we build for that seller, that we're and we build for not just the individual seller, but the agency owners inside of that group as well, that we know that we're building for what the largest brands on Amazon that are not Amazon native brands need, but may or may not know that they need, right? And so people should know that there's more Amazon knowledge that goes into the decisions that we make on product and solution, we believe, than any product room that's ever been assembled in the history of this industry, and that we aim to not win just by great marketing, but win by having the best solutions.
Nice. So where do they put feature requests? I want something built. Like, where do I go?
I'll put you in our Slack channel, man, or you come straight to me, of course. I mean, look, I, you know, anybody can reach out to me directly. It's justin@carbon6.io. I answer everything. We're at every conference basically on planet Earth. So come up to us and yeah, I mean, whatever we can do to be helpful. Aaron, and I mean that really sincerely. We take every bit of information as an important data point, and you know, as long as we serve the brands that we're trying to serve, then our probability of success goes up a lot, because it makes your probability of success go up.
I love it. Well, Justin, man, it's been great having you on. Honestly, it's been a just fantastic conversation. So, like, I'm glad you're back in the game, dude. I mean, seriously.
I have a ton of respect for you. When I met you for the first time at SellerCon, and I met you briefly at night, but I met you the next day, and just hearing the way you talked about your family, and, you know, we both have... you know, international families I do now. I came from a small 100% white upper class town in Connecticut, where there's no diversity, but have managed to stumble upon you know, a bunch of cool experiences in life. But I have a tremendous amount of respect for you.
Appreciate it, brother. All right, well, I'm sure we'll talk soon.